Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, today is a day we need to stop and applaud. There will be some who say, what's the point of this? It's never going to actually become law. But given all the criticism we've heaped upon the Republican leadership in Congress, I even made them my turncoat of the year in the 2015 awards. It is only right that we point out the fact that yesterday, the House of Representatives, following the lead of the Senate, on two critical issues, the repeal of major critical portions of Obamacare, such as the employer mandate, the individual mandate, the Cadillac tax, and other odious provisions. That repeal passed. It's headed to the president's desk thanks to reconciliation in the Senate. They didn't need 60 votes. Same thing on defunding Planned Parenthood. The president will undoubtedly veto these things, but now it's easier to pitch the battle. And the Republicans in Congress are doing what they can with the power they have right now to push these issues, get a highlight on these issues, and show the president is at odds with the bulk of the American people. So, Republicans, well done.
Greg, the first year was practice. Take a mulligan. It took us a while. I had to work out the kinks. You know, you got to loosen up the arm. Look, you know, there are a lot of people who would be, look, what's the point of this if it's not going to enact it? But for everyone who complained, with good reason, throughout all of last year, that Republicans had said, look, we're going to get, we control the House. Give us control of the Senate. We're going to pass a bunch of bills. We're going to send them to Obama's desk, and one of two things will happen. Either he'll sign them into law, and we win, or he'll veto them, and we are basically, you know, we're going to make him veto popular legislation. It's going to hurt him. It's going to hurt the Democratic brand. It's going to set the table for a Republican president in January 2017. And once, you know, we get a Republican president, we will sign them into law, and, you know, we have a happy ending for everyone. Hasn't really worked out that way. Maybe we're getting on track. Hopefully you'd like to see more of this. You know, for all of our griping, this is an indication at least there's some listening from the leadership of Republicans on Capitol Hill.
Yes, absolutely. And you might say, hey, it's an election year. Of course they're going to do this. But as long as you're doing it, you're doing what you said you would do, that's the important thing here. And all right, on to the bad martini now. And Jim, the Henry Kissinger Secretary of State era is controversial for a number of reasons. But one of the best things he did was convince a number of critical Middle East states to abandon their friendship with the Soviets and to do business with the United States. A couple of those important ones were Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Well, thanks to this administration and its abandoning of Hosni Mubarak, cozying up with the Muslim Brotherhood, and not being very friendly with the new Sisi government, Egypt is getting much closer with Russia. They've restored a number of different ties. And of course, there was the airliner between the two countries that went down late last year. And now Saudi Arabia is inching away, probably because the United States is getting so cozy with Iran and doesn't seem to be taking Saudi Arabia's side in Saudi Arabia's latest standoff with Iran. So here's Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir speaking with CNBC about what he would like to see on the diplomatic front.
We are both members of the G20, but we have very little trade, very little investment, and so we wanted to change that. Russia is a great power. Russia has 20 million Muslims living in it. Russia can play a positive role, and we wanted to engage with Russia, and we wanted to improve our relationship with Russia, not at the expense of our relationship with any other country, but for the sake of having better ties with Russia.
No, not at the sake of damaging relations with any other country. I can't imagine who they'd be frustrated with, Jim.
You know, kind of at the heart of this, like, here's the thing. As much as people would argue whether the Obama administration is a classic isolationist or a quasi-isolationist, people might say, well, look, you know, you can't call them isolationists. They intervened in Libya. They led from behind. But it's not like we've seen a sustained, lengthy engagement or sustained attention on any particular foreign policy crisis. So we've got, there are two ways you can point to describe the Obama administration's foreign policy. Either it's quasi-isolationist, this president who came here to fundamentally transform the United States of America, and he's not that into foreign policy and national security and issues like that. Or they just have ADD. Everything is designed towards winning the next news cycle. And, you know, whenever things go badly in ISIS, oh, the fight against ISIS, oh, it's just because we're not communicating these things correctly and things like that. Add it all up. You have this administration that, look, is effectively not, you know, there for the Allies and really provides no serious persistent threat or problem to the enemies, those who hate America, and everyone is adjusting themselves accordingly. And as much as we may not like the Saudi regime or all kinds of regimes around the world, we would rather they be turned towards us and dependent upon us and wanting to engage with us than turning to these other countries. Because otherwise you head back to the 18th century and these great powers fighting it out over supremacy in extremely bloody ways. And you know, it's a depressing state of affairs. And we're probably going to, you know, whoever takes office on January 20th, 2017 is going to be stepping into a giant minefield that has gotten worse for about 8 years on the global stage.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. It's a follow-up from yesterday's crazy martini in which Donald Trump was just casually saying, hey, people are talking about this Ted Cruz being born in Canada thing. It could be a big problem if he's the nominee. Most people coming to the conclusion that it's not really a problem because even though he was born in Canada, he was born a U.S. citizen because his mother was a U.S. citizen. But the question came up to John McCain, of all people, and it's of all people because we just mentioned him yesterday, that his eligibility was questioned in 2008 because he was born in the Panama Canal Zone while his dad was serving in the military at that time in the mid-1930s. McCain was asked about Cruz on KFYI radio.
I do not know the answer to that. I know it came up in my race because I was born in Panama, but I was born in the Canal Zone, which is a territory. Barry Goldwater was born in Arizona when it was a territory, mm-hmm. when he ran in 1964.
But you were born on a base, too, weren't you?
Yeah, it was. Okay. It's a U.S. military base.
Yeah.
That's different from being born on foreign soil. So I think there is a question. I am not a constitutional scholar on that, but I think it's worth looking into. I don't think it's illegitimate to look into it.
So, Jim, is John McCain a birther, or does he just really not like Ted Cruz?
Oh, I guess maybe it's asking too much for McCain to come to the aid of a wacko bird?
Wacko crazy bird, yeah.
Angry bird, you know. A lot of us liked John McCain in 2008 or thought he certainly was, you know, we're pulling for him in that 2008 general election. Kind of liked some of his views and his attitudes, but this is just jerky. This is just a thumb in the eye. You know, look, Ted Cruz, you know, whether you like or don't like Ted Cruz, the idea that he's some Canadian sleeper agent who's coming to take over the place or something, you know, these are stupid arguments that waste time from real arguments we should be having. The law on this is pretty straightforward. The Supreme Court keeps saying they don't really want to deal with this. Maybe at some point we're going to have to. But, you know, there are statutes, scholarly opinions. There's a very broad, you know, a lot of legal discussions that have gone on about this. And if you are born to an American citizen, you're an American citizen from birth, you're a natural born American citizen, meaning you did not immigrate. You did not become a citizen. There's, you know, it's not at some point you had to go through the process. This is just like sand in the gears of Ted Cruz and whatever you think of the guy. Like, if you don't like Ted Cruz, don't like Ted Cruz for serious reasons, not for this crazy theory that he's, you know, Dudley Do-Right in disguise. And he's going to all the jokes faded from yesterday about how he's going to Canadianize the country after 4 years.
Yes, let's get to much more substantive issues like who wears the more manly boots on the campaign trail.
Yeah, I was going to say, they asked me to write about that, Greg. You want to talk about a topic that I don't feel properly informed or enough of an expert on? If we reject a candidate based on the shoes he wears, we're done. Forget it. We don't deserve to win. Wrap up the show. Move to Belize. Get the reverse mortgage that the goateed Fred Thompson was talking about. And just grab your go bag. Give up. Because we've lost the ability to, you know, have serious debates in this country.
Oh, man. Amazing. Jim, have a fantastic day. Talk to you tomorrow.
Happy Thursday, everyone. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.